Birth control isn't one size fits all. Planned Parenthood has expert providers to help you choose the method that suits your life and needs. Check out our convenient schedule. We might even be able to see you today with or without insurance. Visit PlannedParenthood.org or call 1-800-230-PLAN.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and during this broadcast, we invite you to interact with us on our chats. We have two, one on the emotionalpro.com radio page and the other at blogtalkradio.com/FPL. That's blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. We also have a toll-free number, as most of you know, 800-630-7858, and we certainly hope you use it to call us, 800-630-7858. Well, a number of years ago, my wallet was stolen out of my backpack as I stood waiting for a red light to change in a town near my home, and my efforts to find the wallet were to no avail. Within 24 hours, somebody started using my credit cards in a pattern that's used by thieves. And my daughter, who was about 14 at the time, was observing me closely and demanded, "You're not upset. Why are you not upset?" I told her to go look at my license plate, which reads EMOTBAL. I said, "That's what I'm striving for, emotional balance." "Yes, but most people would be angry or crying or worried, and you're not doing any of that. Why not?" "Because," I responded, "the thieves have already taken my wallet. Why should I also give them my peace of mind?" I didn't know it, but somewhere along the line, I had been learning how to have patience and getting the perspective that allowed me peaceful living regardless of external circumstances. And just for your knowledge, my patient was rewarded in only 5 days. My wallet was recovered. It was delivered to me at my home with all my medical and library cards and family pictures and business cards still present. There wasn't a scratch on it, and I used it another 5 years. Well, today we have the advantage of our guest, Alan Lacus, in whose book, Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living, lie many of the secrets you can use to add peaceful living to your repertoire of responses to life. Alan Lacus is the founder and guiding teacher of the Community Meditation Center in New York City, and he's the author of two books, Pocket Peace, Effective Practices for Enlightened Living, and the one we're talking about today, Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living. His writings have appeared in Tricycle Magazine, The Huffington Post, BeliefNet, and most recently he's been interviewed for many publications, including the New York Times, and he's taught in many places such as Columbia University, the New York Insight Meditation Center, the Meditation Community of Washington. Not only that, Alan Lacus was recently chosen as one of the 10 Buddhist teachers to follow on Twitter, next to Thich Nhat Hanh and His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Alan Lacus, it's indeed an honor to welcome you to Full Power Living.
Thank you very much. I am just delighted to be here.
So, in your book on patience, you say no matter what the external circumstances, your impatience can only exist within you, and that you develop patience by working on yourself, not by attempting to change others. Now, the story I told of losing my wallet, will you explain how patience connects to this story? What equanimity, is all about?
Well, you know, Eileen, you just went right to the heart of the matter. There's no wasting time here.
That's me, Alan. Get ready.
That's great. And you know, just before addressing that, as you were telling the story about losing your wallet and your daughter asking you about your response to it, it reminded me of a time, and I wrote this actually in the book Patience, when my daughter was just entering into her teens, which, as you probably know, can be a rather trying time for the teenager and the parent. She asked me something. I don't remember what it was specifically, but it was kind of really stretching things. And I said, well, let me think about that. And she said, why do you always have to think about it? You're a parent. You're supposed to know. I don't know if she got that, but any of us who are parents wish that we just knew. But I think it's wise often to step back and say, let me think about that. It is a form of patience, and it's a form of asking our child to be patient. And it's also sending a message that says, I really care about you. I want to take time to think about this and make a decision that's really going to be in your best interest.
Right. I'm sorry, but that story that you tell about your daughter also points out what gets in the way of a lot of us, which is the perception or the idea or the beliefs we hold about how the world's supposed to be.
Right, and also that we feel that we need to have the answer right away, and if we do want to take a moment to think, people will have an impression of us that we don't know what we're doing, we don't know what we're saying, and in truth, that's not the case. But the significant question that you asked to begin with about patience and impatience can only exist within us. If you really look at that, what happens when a situation arises that brings about impatience? That impatience can only exist within us, but it's not the first place we look. Let's say that someone says something that pushes our buttons. We tend to look right back at that person as being the source and the reason for our impatience. But in reality, and this relates very much to your concept for your show, impatience is a feeling. It's an emotion. It arises within us under certain causes and conditions. Now, those causes and conditions are different for each of us, and we all know that. We know exactly when impatience is arising within us. We feel it. We might feel it in our gut. We might feel it in our shoulders. We might feel it in our neck. But we're going to feel it physically, and we certainly know it emotionally. The problem is that we tend to look outside of ourselves, believing that the cause of impatience and therefore the solution to our impatience is outside of ourselves. Yes, somebody might say something that is rude or abusive or unkind, but the only place that we can experience impatience is within ourselves. Therefore, the place to look to reduce that impatience and bring a greater state of patience is also within ourselves. Then, at a time when we feel that we've really experienced and are in touch with what is going on within, then perhaps we might want to address the person who said what they said that we felt was rude or unfair. But we'll do it in a way that is calmer, and you mentioned equanimity, very important, because otherwise what are we going to do? We're going to snap back the same way that person snapped at us, and now we're in a battle. And, you know, by extension, when we look at those personal battles and we expand that out, then we're just at war. And we've done that since the beginning of time. And what has it led to? Are we at peace? Do these battles, whether they're on a personal level or a global level, do they ever lead to peace? If they did, we would have a world at peace today, and we would all be experiencing inner peace. So, you know, we need to look realistically at our words and at our actions and see if there's a better way.
But you know what comes up in me? I have someone close to me when I talk about peace in the world and the futility of war, who says, who reminds me of this old belief that man is warlike and there will always be wars. How would you relate patience and the approach you've just been talking about to that? How would you answer that question? I guess is what I'm really want to know.
Well, your friend has history on his side, his or
yes.
her side, I don't know which.
Exactly. It is a man, yes.
Yeah. Your friend has history on his side because he can point back to, you know, the oldest of stories, Cain kills his own brother, Abel. However, research today, in fact, a very significant paper was published less than a month ago, reported in the front page of the New York Times, that says that after extensive research, scientists have found nothing in our DNA that backs this concept that we are hardwired a certain way. In fact, what science now has concluded is something that the Buddha taught 2,500 years ago, which is that everything is changing. Not just that everything is going to change, but that everything is changing constantly in each and every moment. In fact, what they say is that matter is really vibration, which of course means that it is changing. Its vibration is always moving. That can be difficult for some of us, especially someone, let's say, of my age, because I've lived with other concepts, whether I really thought of it or not. But I sit at my desk, for instance, and I knock on the desk. It certainly feels solid to me, and I suppose by certain definition it is. But science says that this solid desk of mine is really more space than it is matter. And the matter and the space are vibrating, changing. So while your friend does have history on his side, which would speak for tendencies and propensities, it doesn't speak for reality. There doesn't seem to be anything built into us that suggests that we are unkind, that we need to be disruptive. I think it's part of our conditioning, not part of our DNA. And that says to me that we can change.
Thank you. That's really good. I'm going to go back and listen to that several times. So getting to the heart of the matter once again, what is patience? How does it feel to us? How do we know that we're having patience?
Well, you know, if you go to a dictionary and look up the definition of patience, you'll probably find that you're as dissatisfied as I was when I began doing my research to write this book. It's a perfectly logical question. If you write a book that's titled Patience, one thing the reader should expect to find in the book is, what is patience? I have access in both paper and online to about 12 dictionaries, some of them big multi-volume dictionaries. I could not find a definition that I felt was satisfactory. Hmm. So what I did was I put together from various definitions, something that I felt kind of covered the spectrum. But again, I had to put that together from various sources. So patience, and you know, I think on a certain level, we all know what patience is, and we certainly know when we're impatient. But what I was speaking about was, as a definition, I put this together. Patience is a virtuous quality characterized by calm endurance when dealing with difficult circumstances, perseverance when facing provocation or delay, not reacting negatively to annoyance or anger, forbearance when under stress, particularly that which is long-term, steadfastness when faced with difficulties, bearing misfortune or pain without loss of temper. Now, as I said, that was put together from a number of sources, but what I really don't like about some of these definitions is then you need to know what is endurance, what is perseverance, what is forbearance. And so it's as if we go around in a circle. Fortunately, as I said, I think we all really have a sense of what patience is. We know when we're consciously being patient, and we know that it's when it's not working out very well and we're not very patient. But, you know, we have an interesting vocabulary that we use with patience. We will say, I'm not a very patient person. We'll say, I lost my patience. You know, when we say something like, I lost my patience, we're speaking as if patience is a thing or a commodity, something that I can lose, and then if I go looking for it, maybe I can find that it slipped under the sofa. Oh, there it is. But in reality, and this is what relates so directly to the core of your show, patience is a feeling. It's an emotional quality. It's a feeling that arises under certain circumstances. The Buddhists would call it causes and conditions. And as I think I mentioned a few minutes ago, those conditions are different for each of us. Some of us can wait in traffic on the way to work each day, and we just are used to it, and it doesn't bother us. Others get in that traffic jam, and we just don't understand why everybody doesn't pull over onto the side and let us go through. You know, don't they realize I have to get someplace? And it becomes just turmoil every single day when we're in traffic. Or we're in the supermarket, and the person in front of us is now waiting until they get to the cashier to start getting out their money, and they find they don't have quite enough, so then they have to search for their credit card, and we're just losing it. And someone else is fine. You know, that's a sweet person in front of me. They'll find it, then they'll pay, then I'll pay, and I'll go home. It's just different for all of us. Mm-hmm. So we can't really lay out blanket rules. Although, you know, as children, most of us were just taught some basic skills related to patience. You know, we were told, okay, just take a deep breath, dear, it's going to be okay. Or, now count to 10, and then everything will be fine. And while these sound very basic and mundane, these skills, even as we get well into our adulthood, these skills are very valuable. Because what they do is they invite us to stop, or as I state this in the book, we learn how to create a pause between a certain event that is likely to trip our feelings of impatience. We create a pause so that there is a gap between that event and my responding to that event. And it's in that gap that patience can arise and patience can exist. That gap is very important, and we want to learn about that gap and how to create that. And I spend quite a bit of time in the book, Patience, speaking about that and present some exercises as to how we can do that.
Right. That's a lovely discussion. It strikes me that the fact that it's hard to find a good and comprehensive definition of patience may reflect our lack of attention to it on a cultural basis. So just a side comment there. You know, surprisingly, we're up to our first break. And when we come back, Alan, I'd like you to talk about why you think the Buddha found patience so important. 2,500 years ago, he said it's an essential step before you can reach wisdom. And I'd like to look at that and then to look at the interaction of patience and anger.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we're talking today with author and meditation teacher Alan Lacus, who is the author of Patience. Find out more about Patience at www.patiencebook.com. I think I'm not talking patiently. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I've got a few announcements. Next week, March 22nd, Eva Marie Mora tells us about quantum angel healing. We're going to find out about restoring health and balance through applying the angelic healing formula. And don't forget that upcoming guests are listed at the top of the radio show page on emotionalpro.com. We don't want you to miss a single episode of Full Power Living. And you can call us toll-free, 800-630-7858, or talk with us on our chats at emotionalpro.com or blogtalkradio.com/FPL. If you miss us live or you want to share our show with your friends and family, you can download the archived podcast or you can subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And we do want to thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. We're talking today with Alan Lacus, who was recently chosen as one of the 10 Buddhist teachers to follow on Twitter, next to Thich Nhat Hanh and His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And Alan, before we get back into our other questions, I know that you have personally studied with both of these luminaries, and I wanted to ask you to just tell us a bit what it's like to be with them.
Well, it's an extraordinary experience. His Holiness the Dalai Lama is, I think one of the great human beings on this earth. There's a teaching, a very simple teaching that I think applies to being with both of these great men, and that is, they say, when you have the opportunity to study with a master, the master will probably spend very little time actually teaching. All the rest of the time, watch how they peel their orange and watch how they put on their sandals. So what that's saying is, it isn't even so much in what these great teachers are saying, it's watch how they live. That's what's important. Watch what they do in every moment. Both of these men, Thich Nhat Hanh and the Dalai Lama, they are so present. If they say hello to you, it is as if you are the most important person in the world at that moment. They're not wandering someplace else. That's the single quality that remains with me. Plus, of course, you know, they're both quite brilliant. They're men of peace, and they just have learned that they're not going to let anything interfere with peace. They're not going to be sidetracked, and they're not going to lose their inner peace. That was a big thing. I remember once being on retreat with Thich Nhat Hanh, and he said just very quietly in passing, he said, "Nothing disturbs my peace." And he was saying that as if to say, I do not let anything disturb my peace. But of course, he was a monk from the time he was a little boy. And he said years and years and years to practice and to learn about inner peace. And all we can do when we're with great teachers like this is observe and just kind of take in every detail. I used to watch the way Thich Nhat Hanh walked. It was as if he was just gliding across ice. He was just very present with his feet. And the Dalai Lama, for instance, he enters a room to begin teaching. He just is delighted to be there. He is bowing to everyone. So these are qualities that, you know, I would like to incorporate more into my life, to bring a joyful presence to people wherever I am, and to be a joyful presence within myself.
Well, that, you know, that is very inspiring. One of the things that I teach people is that what you pay attention to, you tend to become.
Yes.
And so your description there is that both of these people have paid attention to their inner life. They've paid attention to becoming mindful and present. They've paid attention. And they've. It sounds almost like they've created a groove inside of them so that it's not nearly as much effort for them as it might be for an ordinary Joe Blow on the street to maintain that inner peace because they have been paying attention to it for so long.
I think that's absolutely true, although when we speak of a groove, we need to also understand that groove is constantly moving. It's not kind of a straight line. You know, I don't think anyone is anything all the time. I don't think anyone is just happy all the time, as an example. Things happen that are disruptive. But as we practice through the years, disruptions are less disruptive. We can handle them. There is this sense that we have that things are going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
It might not work out the way I would have preferred, but it's going to be okay. And, you know, with time, we come to see that. In a certain sense, we've either been through this before or we've been through something similar to this before, and we realize ultimately it's going to be okay. And then for me individually, it will be all over, which is also okay because I don't have any choice. That is the nature of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's very significant to learn about the nature of things because if we do, we can go with them rather than having a sense of resisting the nature of life. We don't want to resist the nature of life. I think what these great teachers have seen is that there will be illness, there will be injury, and that's just part of life. It doesn't mean, you know, that if you twist your ankle, it feels good. It doesn't necessarily feel good at all. So, you know, we're not saying that the person who sits on a meditation cushion or the person who sits in prayer for many hours a day is oblivious to physical pain. We're not saying that at all. But we do come to a place where we can ride with it. Our experience, our perceptions are different. You know, it's as if a teacher said to me one time, you know, you're going to die, but that's not a punishment. You didn't do something wrong.
Uh-huh.
The cause of death is always the same. The cause of death is birth. That which is born will die. So, you know, in our society, we seem to want to hide from that. If we even mention the word death, you know, we get, don't talk about it, as if to say, if I don't talk about it, then it won't happen. Well, so far, that's never proven to be true. And we do want to talk about things because we don't want to be fearful. You know, if we don't speak about something and we keep it hidden away, it's going to be a source of fear. And these underlying sources of fear, by the way, are very much factors in impatience. Whereas if things are more out in the open, if I am able to go with the flow, if I am accepting, life becomes easier. And again,
now,
I should add to that when we speak about acceptance, it doesn't mean that we live a life of passivity. It doesn't mean that we make a doormat of ourselves. It means that we learn what to accept so that it's easier to see what is not acceptable And then with wisdom and compassion, we can take action when something isn't acceptable.
Yes. With just a little expansion, we can go into this question I asked before the break about Buddha saying that patience is an essential step before you can reach wisdom. I think you're already talking about it then. My question is, what's your perception of why Buddha thought that patience was so essential?
Well, you know, let's start really from ground level and be honest. Life is not easy. There are so many disruptions. There's so much turmoil. There's so much that happens that we can't control. In fact, when we really look at it, there is so much more that we can't control than we'd really like to admit. And that's just the nature of the way things are. So we have to learn how to be able to go with that. Now, people say, well, the world today is moving so much faster, and all this technology and all this information is at our fingertips, so we're much more likely to be impatient today. But as you said, I mean, 2,500 years ago, the Buddha was teaching about patience as one of his primary teachings. So what experience did he have? Well, he's walking along a path, and it probably isn't even a path. He's just walking along someplace, and there are two elephants in front of him, and they're walking very slowly, so he has to slow down, and he has to be patient. So it's exactly the same. When we speak about feelings, feelings are universal. You look at a child. I've done a lot of travel in Africa and India. You look at the smile on a child's face, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, it has the same joy about it. When you look at a mother holding a child that is really ill, it has the same sadness about it, the same concern, the same anxiety. You know, great artists have understood this. You go to the opera house, and you listen to an opera in Italian, and you don't know a word of Italian, you still get caught up in the loving moments, in the sad moments, because the music touches universal feelings within us. So while it is true that the world is moving so much faster today, the Buddha could see back in his time that these same feelings existed. Love, compassion, sadness, anxiety, impatience. And so he taught about these. He taught about, actually he always began his teachings by teaching about generosity, because he felt apparently that without a heart that was open to the needs of others, to the concerns of others, we were not really going to be able to lead a moral life and the kind of life that was going to lead us toward a sense of freedom for ourselves, a sense of enlightenment, or let's say becoming a more awakened being. The particular terminology is not all that important. I think it all goes to the same place. Being a person who is in the world in a certain way, and I think it's up to each individual to determine how they want to be in the world, and then to work toward becoming that person, so that even with our little slip-ups, which we will have, we're going to slip up, but we can still move in the direction of being the person we want to be.
Oh, that's really great. I consider myself a recovered angry person. Anger has played a huge role in my life, and I used to be recovering, but I'm going to go out on a limb here. And I was fascinated at how much content you have in patience about anger. You talk about the Buddha saying that anger brings with it great misery, and it churns up and disrupts our thinking. And the 8th century Buddhist teacher Shantideva, a single flash of anger can destroy all the good deeds, the generosity, the kindness we've practiced over thousands of eons, damaging loving relationships to the point where it may take months or years to rebuild them. Anger is really potent. What makes it so potent and destructive?
Well, you know, the line that you quoted from Shantideva, which is, I think, so insightful, he speaks about the good deeds that we have accumulated over many, many eons. But even if one doesn't believe in rebirth, that doesn't matter, because we all know the damage that is done in a single flash of anger just in this lifetime. We've all experienced it. We've experienced it from an outburst of our own anger, and we've experienced it from the outburst of someone else's anger toward us. It simply doesn't feel good. You know, there's a level of this that is common sense and is not rocket science. The Buddha was always saying to people, you need to learn from your own experience. Don't do this because I say so. He would say, I'm only teaching from my experience. But true learning comes from one's own experience. And, you know, I would say to someone, if you have many outbursts of anger, and that goes on all the time, and that feels good to you, and it feels good to those around you, then that's what you have to do. But in reality, I really haven't come across people who could say that. I'm not saying they don't exist, but it just hasn't been my experience. Most people will tell me when I burst out in anger, sometime right after that, I'm going to regret something that I said, or I try to rationalize it. I try to say, he really deserved that. You know, he was acting, he really deserved my anger. And then I say, fine, but how do you feel? Mm-hmm. And then they'll say, well, you know, I did the right thing. And I said, fine, that's in your head. Tell me about inside. How do you feel? Well, they'll say, no, I mean, I'm upset because I don't like having to do that. And then we're getting really to the core of things. How does that feel? You know, and we have to be honest with ourselves. If our actions, if our words, and perhaps most important, if our thoughts leave us not feeling good, we want to pay attention to that. You raised a very important point, which is that what we think about is actually training our mind. We create the propensity of our mind to continue thinking in that direction. So if we're thinking thoughts that are vengeful, that want to get even, that are retaining bitterness or resentment, even if we feel it's absolutely justified, we're just creating more bitterness and resentment within ourselves, which is why forgiveness is such a big factor. Can we figure out a way to let it go? I'm not saying that what the other person did wasn't horrible, but I'm saying, what does it feel like within you to hold on to this anger, to this bitterness? So the relationship that you mentioned between impatience and anger is, I describe it as there being just a thin wall between them. They're not the same. Impatience and anger are not the same. I might be waiting on that long line in the supermarket that we spoke about, and I become impatient, but I'm not really angry at anyone because I realize that could be me fumbling, looking for my credit card. But I am impatient. I want to get home. Same thing in the traffic jam. Same thing at the airport, waiting at the security gate. But impatience and anger are like neighbors that live right next door to each other. You mentioned Shantideva, the great 8th century Indian teacher. He wrote, he actually spoke this, but then he wrote this great work called A Guide to the Way of the Bodhisattva. Bodhisattva is an enlightened being dedicated to the awakening of all other beings. And in the 6th chapter of this work, the title of the chapter in Sanskrit or in Pali is Kanti, which means patience. But he goes immediately to speaking about anger. And it's way deep into the chapter before he ever even mentions the word patience. So he sees a direct relationship between patience and anger. I think they're closely related, but they're different. but you have to be careful. The relationship, and the reason I say you have to be careful, you know, we have prisons throughout this country that are filled with people who committed what we call an act of passion, a crime of passion. That was not a planned crime. It was a crime that happened because things got out of hand. It might have started as impatience, and then someone became really angry, and then all of a sudden, something happened. I wrote about a case study of this in the book, and it's horribly tragic. I mean, it's just, when you read that little account and realize what happened, a good marriage, a good relationship, woman married to a doctor, she had a wonderful career herself, she wanted to start a family. He felt they weren't ready. They get into a hassle about it. It turned out that she, many things were coming out that she had suppressed. He was surprised by that. He grabbed her by the wrist and started saying, you're being very immature. This is why we shouldn't start a family. All of a sudden, she didn't even realize that she had picked up a heavy vase, and she swings at him. She hits him. He is lying on the floor dead. She's in prison. 3 years later, she dies in prison. The loss of two lives, just tragic, that could clearly have not have happened had these people done some work to try to understand impatience as it arises within them. It's just so important.
Mm-hmm. We're up to our second break, Alan. I know it's zooming. We're talking today with author and meditation teacher Alan Lacoste about patience, which is the name of his book, and you can find more about the book at www.patiencebook.com. Remember to ask your questions now or call us toll-free at 800-630-7858. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll return in a moment.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Everybody feels anger, but if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com.
We're back here on Full Power Living with Buddhist teacher Alan Lacoste, author of Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living. And Alan, just to segue off that message that we just heard, when I talk with people, I aim for anger mastery, which means that I want to have dominion over the anger rather than trying to herd it or corral it the way I understand anger management is trying to do. And in the book Patience, you talk about the vital difference between anger management and patience. Would you talk to us some about that?
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up because I feel I'm on exactly the same page with you. First, we want to understand that we do not want to suppress feelings. It's very
yes.
important. And you know, you can probably relate to this, Eileen. So many women in our society, dating way back, were really taught to suppress feelings. The women were supposed to be the peacemakers, to never be disruptive. And, you know, I think we know today that that's just harmful. So, significantly, everybody must remember this is not about suppressing feelings. Anger is a perfectly natural feeling. So is happiness. So is joy. So is impatience. What we want to learn how to do is to become more aware when these feelings are arising within us. And from something that I heard when the break was on, I think that you also take approach of trying to make this as accessible as we can for people. I don't want somebody to spend an hour a day on a meditation cushion. That's probably not realistic in most people's lives. Some people even hear the word meditation and they go, that's not for me. You don't need that word. You don't even need the concept. But I think what we need is the idea of just stop, take 5 minutes a day, and just stop. Sit down and get quiet. You know, consider, is there anything that you're doing that is more important than your physical, mental, and emotional well-being? And, you know, if there is something more important, then go ahead and do it. My own experience is that that's very important for me to tend to each day. So if one just sits down for 5 minutes a day, and this is something that I actually have outlined. I try to put some very basic practices into the book that are not very time-consuming, but very powerful. And the first one I feel that people need, that we all need, is to see if we're really motivated. In other words, ask yourself, why do I want to put in the work to become a more patient person? And let's be honest, it is work. It takes patience to develop patience because we're going to slip up. So you sit and you ask yourself that question, why do I want to put in the work to become a more patient person? And I would suggest that we don't try to answer that question right away because we don't want superficial answers like, well, everybody should be more patient, or because my husband says I should be more patient, or the boss says if I'm not more patient, you know, I'm going to just be out of here. We want the answers that go deeper than that. And in fact, you'll know you're getting to where you need to be if what comes up has kind of a sting to it, a little burn. It doesn't really feel all that good. It's when we remember that last week we really snapped at our four-year-old. We just yelled at him. And then afterwards said, why did I do that? He's such a sweet kid. And yeah, he slipped up, but so what? There should be much better ways than doing what mm-hmm. I did. And that has a little sting to it. So when we sit with that and we say, no, I really do want to be more patient, then we start to develop our own motivation. And that motivation is going to carry us when we slip up and we're able to say, whoops, that's not what I wanted to do, but I'm just going to get back up on the bike and I'm going to ride again because I want to do this. This is important.
Mm-hmm.
And then we look at the ways that we can recognize within ourselves when we're in a conversation. And if we're really listening to the other person, we can notice suddenly that something is going on in that conversation that's turning it a bit contentious because I feel it inside of myself. And that's when I practice this idea of a pause. And I say, wait, what's going on within me right now? Ah, I'm feeling this impatience arise. And realize it's just a feeling. Don't suppress the feeling. Acknowledge the feeling. Acknowledge the feeling so that I can say, ah, I'm experiencing impatience. It's a feeling, but I don't have to act on that feeling. You know, research has shown today that if we just look at a feeling as it arises within us and we don't grasp on it, we don't cling to it, that feeling has a very, very short lifespan. Maybe just over 3 seconds.
Wow.
And a thought that arises, if we don't cling to it and grasp to it, maybe just over 1 second. But it doesn't seem that way to us because we will tend to cling and start writing our stories and writing our add-ons. You know, for instance, I'll just give you an example of that. We're walking along the street and we twist our ankle. Well, there's physical pain, and that is very real. We feel it in the body. But then we begin adding to that, oh, I wonder if my ankle is broken, and how am I going to get to the office? I'll never be able to make it because I'm still 5 minutes away and I can barely walk. And if I'm not there on time, they're going to be very upset with me. I might get fired. If I get fired, it's hard to get a job today. The economy is so bad. I'm not going to be able to feed my family. The kids are going to starve. Everybody's going to hate me. And no wonder everybody's always hated me. I'm just this terrible person. I'm a loser. You know, and I can go on and do this on and on and on. I can do this all day. I can do it for a week. I can do it for an entire lifetime. But if we look at the reality, I twisted my ankle. That's all that happened. So we want to watch what goes on within, how we write these stories, how we add to them, how we create these biographies, which, by the way, we find very interesting. Why? Because they're about me. And I find that very interesting. But
okay.
But that's where we have to watch. That's where we are creating our entire experience of life. And again, with a pause, we can take a look at what's going on. There is an opportunity for patience to arise rather than reacting in our conditioned way, reacting to our habit energy. And, you know, life gets easier.
Mm-hmm. I find that. Now, when I, just one last thing here, when I read your book on patience, I realize that you're describing yourself in generations of people, all of whom are seeking to be loving, to treat themselves and others with kindness and respect and care. And I found it very wonderful to encounter, yet it also put me into a strong awareness of how so much of our world is not focused in that direction. And it led me to the question of what's the most powerful thing each one of us could do right now to increase love and patience and kindness in our world?
Well, you were raising an interesting point when you say that most of us would like to live in a more loving, a more compassionate way, in a wiser way. But, of course, we also question, is that true? Are we speaking about all humanity? I don't know if we know the answer to that. I don't know if there is such a thing as a person who doesn't want to be loving. My own experience and the experience, you know, of the teachers we mentioned before, the Dalai Lama and Thich Nhat Hanh, other great teachers, Jesus, Muhammad, teachers in all traditions, have come to the conclusion that the human being is essentially a loving being, a compassionate being. If we look at what we do instinctively, we see that there is truth in that. Just imagine that you're walking along on the street and someone is walking toward you, and then that person walking toward you trips and starts to fall down. What do you do instinctively? Do you just turn away? Or is it just instinctive that you reach out and go to help that person?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that when we look at that sort of behavior, I think we're seeing truth. I think we're seeing what it is that we really do want to do. So when we acknowledge that, when we look at that and say, yes, there are difficulties, there is a great deal of suffering in the world, Nevertheless, what we can bring to the world is a person looking to be more compassionate, looking to be wise, looking to speak and act from a more compassionate place, and we will develop those qualities. It can take time. I'm not saying that everybody around us is on the same path, but with patience and with work, and let's face it, with determination at times, mm-hmm. we can make our life a more loving, compassionate experience, and it's just going to feel better.
Amen. Amen. That's so wonderful. That's a great way to end our show. I can't believe how fast this hour has gone.
It has flown.
Alan Lacus, it's just been a deep pleasure for me to encounter you both by reading your book, which is Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living, and by talking with you here. And I also want to thank you for modeling patience in our world. Let me remind people that your book, they can find out more about it and order it at patiencebook.com. And I imagine at all major booksellers as well, any bookstores. Alan, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure having you on Full Power Living.
Thank you, Eileen. Really, the pleasure was mine.
All right. Next week, March 15th, Eva Marie Mora talks with me about quantum angel healing, how to restore health and balance through applying the angelic healing formula. I think that's going to be a fascinating exploration. I invite you to join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, our wonderful producer, thank you so much, Paul. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Hey, you, with a rhinestone dog collar. Between us dogs, I just convinced my human to upgrade to a new home with a 1,200-square-foot bathroom. I think she called it a yard. With Wells Fargo's 3% down mortgage option, my human realized a new home was within reach, and I only gave her puppy eyes once. Get your human to talk to a mortgage consultant or learn more at wellsfargo.com/woof.
Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. Down payments as low as 3% on a fixed-rate loan require mortgage insurance. Ask a home mortgage consultant about loan requirements. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a division of Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., Equal Housing Lender, NMLS ID 399801.